Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken, and I'm down here in Missouri, but I'm reading from my Friday, January 5th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And now we have our first piece from Above the Fold. Reports of shots fired decrease. The city of Dubuque saw a drop in the number of shots fired with criminal intent in 2023, a trend police attribute to continued department investment and community outreach. A total of 7 cases of shots fired with criminal intent were reported in 2023, the lowest number since 2018 and the second lowest in the past decade. Of those cases, 5 people were injured, 2 fatally. This is our lowest number in 5 years, said Dubuque Police Department Lieutenant Brendan Welsh. We attribute that to this culture that we hope we are creating that says that this department and this community does not condone gun violence. Each of the 7 cases involved at least 1 weapon being fired with criminal intent, confirmed by either physical evidence or witness corroboration, Welsh said. The figure does not include accidental discharges or suicides. The year-end total was about a 50% drop from the 13 incidents in 2022 and a 66% decrease from the 21 incidents recorded in 2021. Welsh attributed the decline to the department's continued effort to create a community culture intolerant of gun violence and its ongoing collaboration with local leaders, community members, and state and federal prosecutors. These numbers don't happen by accident, he said. As a community, we're investing in law enforcement, investing in technology, such as traffic cameras, and making it known that we won't stand for these kinds of offenses. 6 of the 7 incidents resulted in arrests, Welsh said, with charges ranging from accessory after the fact to first-degree murder. Notably, the first fatal shooting of the year resulted in 5 murder charges, while the second has yet to result in any. Lonnie E. Burns, 31, of Dubuque, was shot and killed February 7th outside his residence in the 700 block of Romberg Avenue. Court documents state that a group was at Burns' residence to rob him of drugs and money they believed to be in his home. 5 people were charged with first-degree murder and first-degree robbery in connection with the incident. Jermaine D. Bowles, 31, of Dubuque, Tiara D. Goodwin, 17, of Maquoketa, Iowa, Aaron C. Johnson, 25, of Chicago, Kenneth D. Reed, 28, of Indianapolis, and Terry J. Valerie, 29, of Dubuque. A jury in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County found Johnson guilty on both counts in December, determining he fired the fatal shots. The remaining 4 defendants have trial dates set for later this year. The second fatal shooting of 2023 has proved more difficult in terms of identifying suspects, Welsh said. Alan Taylor, 36, of Dubuque, was shot and killed July 9th in the 2500 block of Broadway Street, and 3 others were injured. Several people were arrested on warrants unrelated to the shooting, Welsh said, but police have yet to arrest a suspect in Taylor's death, a fact Welsh attributed to lack of cooperation from individuals believed to have witnessed the crime. Investigators believe there's persons involved out there that are still not coming forward with information that would help the investigators close the case, he said. We continue to follow leads and seek out additional witnesses. Welsh also noted that investigators recently received some test results from evidence sent to the state crime lab that has produced several new leads, however. Chuck Harnes, president of the North End Neighborhood Association, said conversations about gun violence occasionally arise at group meetings, particularly in the wake of violent incidents such as the Broadway shooting. In such cases, he said, the association works with police to receive the most updated information to disperse to residents to ease concerns or offer safety tips. We try not to focus on the negative too much, but violence affects a whole community, so we want to be up to date, Harris said. We've been happy to see the incidence of shots fired go down, what appears to be quite considerably. Of the shots fired incidents where the victim and alleged perpetrator have been identified, Welsh said each occurred between individuals who knew each other. None occurred between domestic partners. Dubuque Mayor Brad Kavanaugh similarly heralded the decline in shots fired cases as a positive sign for the declining prevalence of gun-related crimes in Dubuque. Zero incidents is obviously the ideal, but I do think the low number we have and that continuing downward trend is a testament to our police department and the overall safety of this community, he said. A decline in shots fired with criminal intent does not cover all trends for gun-related injuries or deaths. In 2023, data from the Gun Violence Archive states that more than 24,000 people nationwide committed suicide by firearm, over half of all firearm-related deaths. In 2023, 6 of the 14 suicides known to the Dubuque Department involved a firearm, Welsh said. Welsh said the number of mental health-related calls the department receives has increased in recent years. Each officer receives some training on responding to individuals in crisis, he said. But the department also rolled out a critical incident team last year to further improve its response. This was our first year where we had 2 full-time officers dedicated strictly to not only responding to these types of calls, but following up with people later to connect them with resources, Welsh said. We're really doubling down on our investment in how we respond to incidents of people in crisis. Our second piece from the front page. Recipients of Medicaid face roadblocks in dental care. When a second dentist joined Valerie Pekish's Dubuque Pediatric Dentistry practice in July, the floodgates opened. With 2 dentists, Pekish's practice can take on more patients with Medicaid, but the more word gets out, the more calls come in requesting appointments. She said her practice, Pekish Pediatric Dentistry, is one of a few pediatric dentists in Dubuque that accept new Medicaid patients on a relatively open basis. Dentists who accept new patients on Medicaid are a rarity in Dubuque, an issue that leads to lengthy appointment wait times or long drives to other towns for recipients to access care. Delta Dental, one of the insurance carriers for Iowa Medicaid recipients, maintains a list of available dentists who accept recipients of the healthcare program serving people with low incomes or disabilities. However, most of the offices listed as accepting Medicaid in Dubuque said when contacted by the Telegraph Herald that they do not currently accept Medicaid or only accept it for existing patients. Many local providers say low Medicaid reimbursement rates make it nearly impossible to afford taking on new Medicaid patients. The reimbursement rates come in somewhere around 38 cents on the dollar, Pekish said. A lot of offices, that's barely going to hit their overhead, or doesn't. The reimbursement rates make it really difficult, particularly for certain types of practices, to see a lot of Medicaid. She said new or smaller offices might find it difficult to take on many Medicaid patients because they don't have the client volume to absorb the lost money. The administrative burden associated with taking Medicaid patients also is taxing for offices, Pekish said. Pekish said her associate dentist recently asked when they will need to stop accepting new patients. I just told her, well, we'll take as many as we can for as long as we can. But at some point, we have to stop taking new patients so we can catch up with the backlog, Pekish said. The issue spreads beyond Dubuque, though. Leaders in the dental industry say it is a statewide problem. Iowa Representative Steve Bradley, Republican Cascade, who is a dentist, said he has advocated for decades to increase the Medicaid reimbursement rate for Iowa dentists. Bradley has served stints as president of the Iowa Dental Association and on the Iowa Dental Board. Right now, he said, it is cheaper for him to give care for free than to accept Medicaid because reimbursement rates don't even cover the administrative costs. You have to take 5 to 10 regular pay patients just to break even, he said. Keon Smith, iSmile and oral health coordinator at Unity Point Health Visiting Nurse Association, said a lack of dentists who accept new Medicaid patients is the main struggle she sees for prospective patients across Iowa. We're in a bit of a crisis throughout the state on dental access to care, Smith said. A lot of children that we see and pregnant women that we identify with dental decay have to travel far out of the county to get care, or they have to wait upward of like 6 months if they don't already have an established dentist. Families who are new to the area or have switched to Medicaid struggle to find a dental office, she said. While local dentists sometimes accept referrals from Smith when they have time, general access to care for Medicaid recipients is low, she said. While advocates and dentists primarily call for increasing reimbursement rates, local initiatives also seek to alleviate the problem. Dental health was identified as one of three major problems and priorities in the latest Dubuque Community Health Assessment and Improvement Plan, which outlined several strategies to address oral health locally. Those strategies include creating an oral health advisory board on which local dental leaders can work together on initiatives. Smith also stressed the importance of increased education and awareness about oral health. If families can't see a dentist, Smith said, they at least should receive education on proper oral hygiene and on tobacco use. Education is important to us just to make sure that everybody can have a base knowledge of oral health to hopefully prevent some of this decay that we see throughout the community, Smith said. Crescent Community Health Center's dental clinic, which serves many Dubuque residents who are uninsured or on Medicaid, also is set to expand this year to increase capacity, particularly for oral surgery and pediatric care. The clinic also will add a dental care mobile unit in the coming months. Until then, dental clinic manager Diana Gao said Crescent is at capacity to serve dental patients. It is a struggle right now until the expansion is done, Gao said. Right now, what we're trying to do is plan as best that we can. Gao said, because many patients cannot easily access dental care, whether because local dentists don't accept Medicaid or the patients are uninsured, it isn't a priority for them until they are in pain. When patients don't receive care until they're in a lot of pain, care can become more complicated and emergency-based, she said. Oral health also can affect overall health and wellness. Gao said chronic infections in the mouth affect the whole body, including conditions such as high blood pressure and diabetes. Our final front page piece has a large picture with it, and it has a woman holding and petting a cat, it looks like at the humane shelter. And the caption beneath it reads, Bree Eichhoff Dubuque Regional Humane Society's Director of Operations, holds the cat Mickey at the facility on Chauvinel Road on Thursday. Mickey is one of 359 cats currently sheltered by the organization. And our article's title, Cat Batch Fever? It's raining cats and more cats in the tri-state area, and that is creating problems for local animal shelters. Dubuque Regional Humane Society officials said they recently have taken in high numbers of cats, to the point that the organization is exceeding the capacity of its facilities. Officials on Thursday reported sheltering 359 cats, about 100 more than the shelter housed at this time last year, and about 60 more than the shelter has kennel space for. "It's not necessarily anything new, but we have seen an increase lately," said Noel Chesney, executive director of the Dubuque Humane Society. "We have cats in crates in the hall because we don't have anywhere else to put them." Cora Sutton, head of Jackson County Humane Society in Maquoketa, Iowa, said her organization also is receiving a large number of cats, though she added the numbers haven't recently or necessarily increased compared to recent years. "We're seeing the same thing," she said. "The overall numbers are almost the same, just more kittens this year than anything else." The overcrowding of animal shelters isn't a story unique to the area. Shelter Animals Count, an organization that tracks the capacity of animal shelters nationally, reported that shelters throughout the country are experiencing, on average, a 10% increase in overall animal intakes compared to 2021. Locally, the influx of cats is creating more problems than just space limitations. Bree Eichhoff, Director of Operations at Dubuque Regional Humane Society, said the minimum cost for the facility to take in a cat, which requires testing, vaccinations, microchipping, and spaying or neutering, ranges from $75 to $100 per cat. That doesn't include the cost to feed them and keep their enclosures clean. "It's creating a significant expense for us," Eric Eichhoff said. The overpopulation of the Dubuque Animal Shelter is compounded by an overall decline in pet adoptions. Eichhoff said the shelter's adoptions were down 5% in 2023 compared to the previous year. "We have more coming in than going out," Chesney said. "It's not ideal for the staff who are trying to clean and take care of the daily tasks that need to be done, and it's not ideal for the cats either." Chesney said the rising cat population largely stems from cats not being spayed and neutered and multiplying at a rapid rate. To combat this, the Dubuque shelter last year opened a low-cost spay and neuter clinic in hopes of curbing the rapidly rising local cat population. But Chesney said that clinic has run into its own challenges as well. Demand for the clinic remained high throughout 2023, which Chesney said has resulted in a very long waiting list. "Reducing that waiting list has been challenging because finding volunteer veterinarians to help perform hundreds of spay and neuter surgeries has proven difficult. It's created additional challenges for us," Chesney said. "The more we can do it, the more we can get ahead of the problem. But that hasn't been easy." Chesney said residents can help by being aware of the problem. She encouraged cat owners to have their animals spayed and neutered, and those looking for a cat should know they have more than their pick of the litter at a local animal shelter. Chesney said she hopes increasing public awareness of the cat overpopulation problem eventually can reduce the number of cats being brought to the Humane Society. But for now, the problem shows no signs of letting up. "It's going to become more and more of a problem," she said. "The cats just keep multiplying." Well, it's really unfortunate. In our life, we've owned 3 or 4 shelter cats. I think it's important that we take care of our animals out there. Now we'll turn to the first of our Dubuque and Tri-State pieces. Panel no longer pursuing changes to park naming policy. With 2 new planned Dubuque parks recently named, members of the city's Parks and Recreation Commission are dropping discussions on reforming the way those names are chosen. Commission members recently agreed to not recommend that Dubuque City Council members alter the city parks and recreation facility naming policy. In the months prior, the commission proposed that a sentence be added to the policy that stated, when renaming current facilities, the original purpose and intent of the facility's most recent name shall be taken into consideration. However, Jennifer Tigas, a commission member, said it ultimately was decided the addition of the sentence likely would cause more harm than good. We had a long conversation about what the ramifications of it would be, she said. We decided to kind of just let it go. Discussions of making a change to the city's park and facility naming policy stem from a decision by city council members in May to reject the Parks Commission's recommendation to rename what was formerly Piotrowski Park to J.C. Park. Instead, the council agreed to rename the park Sister City International Park. The decision resulted in frustration by Parks and Recreation Commission members who spent months collecting more than 100 citizen submissions of recommended park names and holding public input sessions before finally settling on the recommendation for the council. We tried so hard to read the policy and go by it, Tigas said. We chose a name that hit those criteria the best, so to have it all wiped away was really unsettling. Tigas said she doesn't believe the commission will further pursue changes to the naming policy, and she hopes the troubles the commission experienced with renaming Piotrowski Park were an unfortunate anomaly. In the meantime, city staff members are already in the midst of developing 3 new small parks in the city, set to be located in the English Ridge, Eagle Valley, and Westbrook neighborhoods. The parks are currently in the design phase, and Leisure Services Director Marie Ware said she hopes to bring finalized plans for the parks to the City Council for approval next month. Construction on the parks likely will begin this summer and conclude sometime in the fall. We are really excited about where we are at with it, Ware said. We expect to build all 3 parks in 2024. Dubuque City Council members already agreed to name the Eagle Valley Neighborhood Park Eagle Valley Park. This week, council members unanimously voted to name the other 2 planned parks after the neighborhoods they will occupy, based on the recommendation of the Parks and Recreation Commission. We now turn to our opinion page, and today we have for the other view an article by Tim Trinkle. Trinkle is a faculty member at Upper Iowa University, a resident of Dubuque, and author of 2 books about Dubuque. And his piece is entitled Home Built on Sweat and Blood of Immigrants. Our home was built in the 1890s using horse and wagon to carry rough-cut limestone rock as wide as 4 feet that was laid into the shovel-dug cellars. The rough, scarred boards used for construction, boards sawed at a mill or shaved with 2-man saws, would have been piled deeply onto other wagons for delivery. As the walls were mudded with horsehair and the sweat and blood of men accustomed to the heavy work, the project might have been covered by cloth to stave off the rain and snow. The men were likely born during the Civil War epoch. There is a spirit here that watches over my wife and me. Our home is unlike the new home, shiny and unscuffed, manicured and landscaped for eyes that look at the gloss of the smooth surfaced driveway leading to the 2 or 3 car garage. Our home refuses to say we're important. There's a dignity and humanity in that. The construction of our 1890s haven was done by men with the hardy gene stamped upon their souls, men born to build the city and the nation. They may have spoken a saltier language, lived a more primitive lifestyle, drank from the bottle, and wiped their mouths with their sleeves. They spoke other languages, but cooperated somehow, gathering in the ancient rule that we are better with a family, a tribe, and a team. They slung their tools and bore the beams from the horse-drawn wagons. They were accustomed to sweat, to calluses so thick they lost feeling in their hands, and to accidents they ignored. They were not born like crying children of a subdivision who fall and scrape knees that are bandaged because they have boo-boos. Toughness was a given. Despite some knowing poetry and holding literacy as a precious gift, it is a likelihood in the work of cut rock and beam and brace that someone fell. 2 blocks away, the quarry had begun. The count of men who died in these projects is unknown. Their grunts are now echoes, their sweat long ago used by the grasses and wild growing things. If they left anything, it shows in the pride of old homes, built in rows south of Ham's mansion, where parties were thrown for no reason other than they could. The beginnings of the row homes here on Lincoln Avenue must have included teams who first dug and clambered, toiled and watched, checked and rechecked the plumb lines and the fit of rock that weighed in tonnage. Wood slides would have been used to wrench the big rock on and off the wagons. If progress included taking down trees, then they had a view of the river while they ate lunch. The limestone brick they dropped into the basement cellars must have been cut from the backyard walls of the great quarry blocks away. The walls are now backyard landscapes, nature-born, unlike the college-educated landscape of an architect's design. Here, faces of erosion abide, and bird nests fit into crevices. Our Lincoln Avenue home must have been named for the president, his assassination remembered by the 1890s builders of Dubuque. And these builders must have arrived from other lands. No worries then about your family of origin or whether a border was crossed. Some of the builders' not too distant relatives may have been alive when the Declaration of Independence was signed. It is unlikely they all spoke English. The spirit of our old home wants something told about the virtue of work, that sweat and blood has value, that building involves sharing the load, that cooperation has meaning, and that a sundry group built homes that lasted. And maybe, if in the shallows of today's conversations, possessions, the high priority, the hollow sounds of progress break for a moment, so earlier sacrifice for the good of us all can yet define our humanity. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DUPACO and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. I'm Ken, reading from the Friday, January 5th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we now turn to today's obituaries. Herbert P. Recker, Dyersville. Herb Recker of Dyersville passed away at home, surrounded by his family, on January 2nd, 2024, after a courageous 11-month battle with acute myeloid leukemia. Visitation will be held from 2 to 8 p.m. Monday, January 8th, at Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville. Visitation will continue from 9 to 10 a.m. Tuesday, January 9th, at the funeral home prior to funeral mass. Mass of Christian Burial will commence at 10:30 a.m. at St. Francis Xavier Basilica in Dyersville, with burial in the church cemetery. Herb was a loving husband, father, and grandfather. His family was his greatest accomplishment. Herb was born March 2, 1953, to Helen Hertz and Florian Recker, and grew up in the Sand Springs area. He attended St. Paul's Grade School in Worthington and graduated from Beckman High School in 1971. After graduating, Herb entered the Iowa National Guard, where he served 6 years. At a dance in Dyersville, Herb met the love of his life, Mary Stelker. They would marry on September 13, 1975, and have 48 years of partnership in love, family, and farming. Herb and Mary were blessed with 4 sons. Herb began farming on the home farm after graduation, eventually purchasing the farm and working the land with his family through his retirement in the fall of 2022. In 1993, Herb began working as a Pioneer Seed sales representative. He worked with many farmers on their seed and crop insurance needs over the years, building many positive relationships. He formed Recker Ag Services when his son Mike joined the business. Herb was a faithful man and an active member of the church for his entire life, where he was a Eucharistic minister, usher, and a circle coordinator. Herb and Mary were active in their faith through Marriage Encounter and have continued to meet with a special group they call SOS. Herb and Mary enjoyed spending time with their family and friends, attending their grandchildren's many events, touring across the country on their Goldwing motorcycle with a great group of friends, spending time at the Maples on Lake Delhi, traveling and taking Corvette rides. Herb was known for his dry sense of humor, generosity, and kindness to others. He was always quick to help anyone in need. He was especially proud of his grandchildren. Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville is assisting the family, and information is available at www.kramerfuneral.com. Memorials may be sent to the family in care of Kramer Funeral Home, 750 12th Avenue Southwest, Dyersville, Iowa, 52040. Nancy J. Woodrich. Nancy J. Woodrich, 84, of Dubuque, passed away January 3rd at University of Iowa Hospitals in Iowa City, surrounded by her loving family. A visitation will be held with celebration of life service following at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, from 10 a.m. to noon today. A private burial will be at Linwood Cemetery. Nancy was born on February 17, 1939, in her parents' home in Dubuque. Her father, Joseph, opened and operated the 10-pin tap, and she remembered collecting for the Euchre Games, which is where she discovered her penchant for card games and met her husband, Bill. She often played euchre with family at evening dinner parties. Prior to marrying Bill, Nancy worked at Brown's Publishing in Dubuque, where she took great pride in working with the machines and as a bookbinder. Through the years, she babysat many children, including the Geezy Boys. Nancy loved her family and raising her 4 children. She provided a loving, fun-filled childhood, leaving her children with many great memories, such as special after-school treats, bedtime cookie parties, wonderful home-cooked meals, and lots of hugs. She made a point of attending numerous school activities, including plays and sporting events, cheering everyone on. Nancy and Bill enjoyed their retirement years in Prescott, Arizona, where they took part in many bus trips to casinos and enjoyed the warm weather before returning home to Dubuque to be closer to their children. Nancy made friends with everyone she met, always greeting everyone with a warm smile. She loved to talk on the phone and enjoyed extended shopping trips with her sister-in-law, Kathy. Her favorite things included Lawrence Welk, Hallmark movies, and especially The Golden Girls. She was an avid painter and enjoyed watching Bob Ross. She shared her love of music with her children. Paul J. Shanahan, Maquoketa. Paul J. Shanahan, a cherished husband, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, brother, and friend, passed away peacefully January 2nd in Maquoketa at the age of 84. Born March 15, 1939 in Bernard, Iowa, Paul was the son of Johnny and Isabel Lammer Shanahan. On May 6, 1961, Paul married the love of his life, Arlene McLaughlin, at St. Lawrence Catholic Church in Otter Creek, Iowa. Together they welcomed 5 sons into the world, creating a family legacy filled with love, laughter, and enduring memories. Paul's dedication to his family was evident in every aspect of his life, and he took great pride in the accomplishments of his children and their families. Paul's work ethic was as strong as his commitment to his family. He began his career farming in Otter Creek until 1977, after which he joined General Thermal in Maquoketa, where he worked diligently for 10 years until its closure. In 1983, he brought his talents to T&J Manufacturing in Maquoketa, where he remained until his well-deserved retirement in 2004. His colleagues remember him as a reliable and hard-working individual who always lent a helping hand. A man of faith, Paul was a devoted member of Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Maquoketa and an active participant in the Maquoketa Father Lusbach Knights of Columbus Council No. 8269. His involvement in the church and council was a testament to his belief in community service and his desire to make a positive impact on those around him. Paul's interests were as varied as they were joyful. He was a former member of Maquoketa Country Club, where he enjoyed golfing and the camaraderie of fellow members. His passion for collecting toy tractors was more than a hobby. It was a reflection of his love for agriculture and the simple pleasures of life. Paul could often be found riding his John Deere lawnmower, taking pride in his perfectly cut grass, and he cherished the moments spent visiting with family, sharing stories, and creating new memories. A funeral mass celebrating his life will be held at 11:30 a.m. Monday, January 8th at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Maquoketa. Visitation will occur prior to the funeral from 9:30 a.m. to 11:15 a.m. at the church. Burial will be in Sacred Heart Cemetery, Maquoketa, Iowa. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, memorials may be directed to Hospice of Jackson County. Carson Celebration of Life Center in Maquoketa is caring for the family. Online condolences may be left at www.carsonandson.com. Mary Ann M. Burbach. Mary Ann M. Burbach, 91, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, January 2nd. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10:45 a.m. Tuesday, January 9th at Resurrection Catholic Church, where a mass of Christian burial will follow at 11 a.m. Burial will take place in Resurrection Cemetery. Hoffman, Schneider, and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 3860 Asbury Road, is assisting the family. William L. Cruzy, Guttenberg. William L. Cruzy, 80, of Guttenberg, died Sunday, December 31st. Visitation will be held from 3 to 8 p.m. Monday, January 8th at Morris Funeral Home in Guttenberg, where services will take place at 10 a.m. Tuesday, January 9th. Burial will follow in Guttenberg City Cemetery. Lydia Robinson, Savannah. Lydia Robinson, 64, of Savannah, died Friday, December 29th, 2023. Visitation will be held from noon to 2 p.m. Sunday, January 7th, at Law Jones Funeral Home in Savannah, where a time of sharing will follow. Burial will follow in Center Hill Cemetery in Carroll County. Andrew S. Christensen, Coralville. Andrew S. Christensen, 43, of Coralville and formerly of Dubuque, died Thursday, October 26, 2023. Services will take place at 2 p.m. on Saturday, January 6th at First Baptist Church. Lensing Funeral Home of Iowa City is assisting the family. Norma Sanchez. Norma Sanchez, 69, of Dubuque, died Wednesday, January 3rd. A celebration of life will take place at a later date. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, is assisting the family. With our passings, we always appreciate and embrace with love those new arrivals that any of us might know. And we have just a few for now. Tuesday, January 2nd, Fitzpatrick Dean, Nate Fitzpatrick, and Chelsea Dean of Andrew, Iowa, a boy, Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Wednesday, January 3rd, Muntz, Chad and Anna Muntz of Iowa, of Asbury, Iowa, a girl at Mercy. Welcome, you two little ones, to a new year and a new life. And we have one more tri-state piece. Police. Man started fire near Dubuque residence after threatening to, quote, burn this place down, end quote. Police said a man started a small fire outside a Dubuque residence after threatening to burn this place down. Marquez M. Williams, 25, of Cedar Rapids, was arrested at 4:34 p.m. Wednesday in the 2200 block of Twin Valley Drive on a charge of first-degree arson. Court documents state that police and firefighters responded at approximately 2:58 p.m. to the 1500 block of Iowa Street for a report of a small fire outside of a residence. An occupant of an apartment of the residence told police he had called 911 after smelling gasoline outside and seeing a man he knew as Mikey standing next to the fire. The man near the fire fled the scene in a vehicle before authorities arrived, documents state. The building occupant told police the man had been dating the occupant's sister and was upset when she was no longer in the residence. The man said, "I'm going to burn this place down," prior to exiting the residence, documents state. A review of traffic camera footage showed a man wearing a black jacket, light-colored jeans, and a ski mask, later identified as Williams, exiting a vehicle and walking into a gangway just east of the Iowa Street residence moments before a fire is observed next to the building, documents state. Williams is seen leaving the area and driving to the area of Twin Valley Drive. Williams denied any involvement with the fire and told authorities he would have no reason to start a fire. When he was asked about someone hearing him say he was going to burn the residence down, Williams said, "I say a lot of things I don't mean," documents state. Dubuque Fire Marshal Kevin Esser said the blaze was minor. It was limited to some leaves on the ground, Esser said. Now we'll turn to our news in brief, bits and pieces of what's going on around us. And our first one, authorities. Belmont parents charged with homicide in death of infant from Belmont, Wisconsin. Authorities said two people from southwest Wisconsin are charged with homicide in the death of an infant. Maria Guadalupe Altahua Aguilera, 23, and Azariel Aguilera Consuelos, 24, both of Belmont, recently were arrested on charges of first-degree reckless homicide and physical abuse of a child, repeated acts causing great bodily harm, according to a press release from the Lafayette County Sheriff's Department. The release states that authorities were notified December 23rd of a potential child abuse incident in Belmont involving an infant. On December 27th, authorities learned the infant had died at UW Health American Family Children's Hospital in Madison. Guadalupe Altahua Aguas and Aguilar Canceles were arrested in Madison and had an initial appearance in Lafayette County Circuit Court on Wednesday, the release states. Online court records state that a cash bond was set at $1 million for each. Both remained in custody Thursday afternoon as authorities continued to investigate the incident, the release states. Dubuque woman sentenced to 2 years probation in prostitution case. A Dubuque woman has been sentenced to 2 years of probation for pleading guilty to a charge of prostitution. Daphne L. Almendarez, 49, recently received the sentence from Iowa District Associate Judge Robert Richter in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County. The charges stem from a June 12th incident in which court documents state Almendarez arranged to meet with a man to exchange sexual services for money. Almendarez had called police that day to report the man had pointed a gun at her upon arrival, causing her to flee. Documents state the man was identified and later located, but that no firearms were located on his person. The police later executed a search warrant on a social media account belonging to Almendarez and located messages in which she was offering sexual services for money to several clients between May 2nd and June 16th, documents state. Annual Music Crawl returning to Dubuque. An annual music crawl will return to Dubuque's downtown later this month. Dubuque Main Street's downtown music crawl will take place January 27th throughout the downtown district. Shows will start as early as 1 p.m. and last late into the night. Several area businesses will participate in the event, such as The Lift, Fox Den Motel, Stonecliff Winery, and more. In addition to musical performances, many participating venues also will offer promotions and discounts on menu items or other products. More information about the event and a full list of participating businesses will be posted online at DubuqueMainStreet.com. Solar company Humane Society in Illinois announced partnership for solar installation program. From Elizabeth, Illinois. Safe Haven Humane Society in Elizabeth will partner with Aero Solar of Galena for a pilot program to help nonprofits obtain solar energy. A press release states that Aero Solar is establishing a nonprofit assistance program in which the solar energy company will donate a portion of the cost of installing solar at local charitable organizations, which will be identified on a case-by-case basis. The company chose Safe Haven as the first participant. The solar installation at Safe Haven is expected to save the shelter $4,000 in annual energy costs, according to the release. Aero Solar will donate $20,000 of the installation cost back to Safe Haven, and Safe Haven seeks community support to raise the remaining funds for the installation. Interested donors should call 815-858-2265 or email safehaven1471@gmail.com. Aero Solar also will contribute $500 to Safe Haven when a new customer purchases solar from Aero Solar and mentions Safe Haven, according to the release. For more information about the new Aero Solar program for nonprofits, contact Greg Hart at 815-990-3117 or greg@helloaeroco.com. Bird counting event set for today. Dubuque County Conservation will host a free bird counting event today. The event will be held from noon to 2 p.m. at E.B. Lyons Nature Center at Mines of Spain State Recreation Area, 8991 Bellevue Heights Road, according to an online announcement. Participants will learn about beginner bird identification and embark on an easy hike to look for birds. The bird observations will be uploaded to help conservation efforts. Register at secure.rec1.com/IA/Dubuque-County-IA /catalog. Agency plans engagement session. The Solid Waste Agency for Dubuque and Delaware Counties will hold an engagement session with residents from its service area next week. Dubuque Metropolitan Area Solid Waste Agency will hold the session from 6 to 8:30 p.m. Thursday, January 11th at the Jewel Transit Building, 950 Elm Street, according to a press release. The release states that information gathered at the session will be reviewed by the agency's board as it establishes a strategic plan for the next 5 years. Call Kenneth Miller, 563-589-4354, or visit dmaswa.org for more information. Shelters, pavilions available to rent. Pavilions at Dubuque County Parks are now available for rent for the 2024 season. Dubuque County Conservation operates 8 pavilions at Swiss Valley Park, Finley's Landing, Proving Grounds Recreation Area, New Wine Park, Mud Lake Park, E.B. Lyons Nature Center, and Graff Park. Enclosed facilities, open-air shelters, cabins, and other spaces also are available for events such as family picnics, reunions, and graduation parties. Prices and amenities vary. Visit dubuquecounty-iowa.gov/697facilities for more information. Free screening of Barbie offered. Dubuque's library will host a free screening of Greta Gerwig's Barbie next week. The 2023 live-action comedy will be shown from 6 to 9 p.m. Thursday, January 11th at Carnegie Stell Public Library, 360 West 11th Street. Starring Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling, the movie is rated PG-13 for suggestive references and brief language. Seating is first come, first served. Call 563-589-4225 or visit carnegiestout.org for more information. Farm Succession Focus of Workshop Series. The University of Wisconsin-Madison Division of Extension will hold a virtual workshop series on farm succession planning. Cultivating Your Farm's Future will be offered in midday and evening options from noon to 1:30 p.m. Wednesday, January 31st and February 7th, 14th, and 21st, and from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Thursdays, February 1, 8, 15, and 22, according to a press release. The live sessions will be held via Zoom video conferencing. The release states that Extension Farm Management Specialists will lead discussions and activities that provide tools and resources for farmers who want to start their succession plans. Participants will receive a weekly email with homework and assignments designed to help prepare for discussions and activities. Register online at uwmadison.eventsair.com/farm24/register by January 19th. Registration is $100 per farm and includes one workbook, folder of materials, course videos, and 4 live Zoom sessions. Additional workbooks are $15. Email Joy Kirkpatrick at joy.kirkpatrick@wisc.edu or Caitlin Davis at Caitlin, that's K-A-I-T-L-Y-N, Caitlin.Davis2@wisc.edu or call 608-263-3485 for more information. You know, something I'm going to have to find out for all of my listeners is if all these numbers I throw out there, if they can be repeated on your devices or not. Otherwise, my goodness, it'd be so hard to jot down this information. But I will check into that before the next time I'm on air. I think it's important for all of you. And now we conclude with our weekend buzz the noteworthy things to do on this chilly January weekend. And we start with Fabulous Fridays 2024. Today, St. Luke's United Methodist Church, 1199 Main Street, noon to 12:30. The free concert series kicks off St. Luke's 32nd season of Fabulous Fridays. It kicks off with a presentation of the church's famous Tiffany stained glass windows, along with music from organist Charles Barland, clarinetist Sue Heddle, violinist Ann Duckow, and cellist David Patterson. For more information, stlukesdbq.org/fabulous Fridays. Let's glow crazy. Opening reception today, Galena Center for the Arts, 941 Gear Street in Galena. 4 to 5 p.m., Scales Mound High School art students and art club members have created a black light sensitive exhibit, which will be up through the month of January at the Center for the Arts. Attendees are invited to wear neon-colored clothes to meet the artists and explore how light and art meet. General admission is free. More information at tinyurl.com/GalenaGlow. Snowshoe or hike at Prairie Creek. Saturday, Prairie Creek Recreation Area, 1215 East Summit in Maquoketa. 10 to 11 a.m. With or without snow, the public is invited to explore a winter wonderland at Prairie Creek Recreation Area. Participants for the free guided adventure will meet at the pavilion at 10 a.m. If there is snow, hikers are asked to bring their own snowshoes. Registration in advance is required. You register by calling 563-652-3783, or you can email tvorwald@jacksoncounty.iowa.gov.